And welcome into the Doug Russell Podcast. It is the weekend edition as I record this. The sun is shining. The birds are singing outside of the podcast studios, but I guess that's going to change weather-wise, or at least if you're in Wisconsin. I know that this podcast, as I am reminded every time our senior producer tells us where we are, I guess we're in Ireland this past week, which is great. We've been in Australia. I think we've got a couple of listeners in Australia, which is awesome. A lot in California, a lot in Arizona, mostly, though, in Wisconsin. I'd say about 55% of the downloads come from the state of Wisconsin, which is understandable. But as I said all along, I mean, if you're from Wisconsin, if you are a fan of Wisconsin sports teams and you don't happen to live here, this is a great way to keep in touch with your team. So that's one of the gratifying things that I've found about doing this podcast since we started last September. By the way, this is show number 72 that we've done so far of the Doug Russell Podcast. So we've got a lot of Brewers baseball to talk about today. We'll get to that in just a second. College basketball, the conference tournaments are in full swing, unlike last year. Not much to say about Marquette. Wow, what happened at the Big East tournament? They got throttled by Georgetown in the first round. Things have not improved for the Marquette Golden Eagles. I like Steve Wojciechowski. I really do, but let's be real. He's long gone without the pandemic. He has gotten a reprieve at least once, maybe twice, because of the pandemic in the last year. He's a good man, Steve Wojciechowski. But the boosters of Marquette basketball demand more, and they should demand more. This is a program that has history. This is a program that's in a good conference. This is a program that has good facilities. It's a great university. But this Marquette basketball program has been treading water for most of the last decade. 9 years ago, the Marquette Golden Eagles made it to the Elite Eight under Buzz Williams. They have no tournament wins since. Again, almost a decade. And it's a reflection of the leadership of the program. Again, Steve Wojciechowski is a good man, but he has not won consistently enough at Marquette. But his buyout is big. And that's, I think, the reason right now that a lot of coaches, not just Steve Wojciechowski, I think that there are a lot of coaches around the country that have their jobs been going the way that they're going in other years, they would have long since walked the plank. And I think Steve Wojciechowski, it's fair to say that the honeymoon period is over for him. And next year, after we have, you know, everybody gets the shot in the arm and we're back to normal, as we all, knock on wood, I don't know if that's real wood, I don't think it is, knock on wood, if everything is back to normal in a year, if this team is still without a tournament win, I think there's going to be a change at the helm of the Marquette Golden Eagles. Okay, so that's Marquette. The Wisconsin Badgers, Greg Gard's job is quite safe, but Wisconsin barely hung on for dear life against Penn State. Now, the Badgers rather had a bye in the first round of the Big Ten tournament, but they as the number six seed, but it was their first game. You've got to be able to beat up on Penn State. They were up by 18 points with, what, 7.5 minutes left to play? And they won by one, 75-74. As I record this on Friday morning, Wisconsin has their rematch with Iowa tonight. But by the time you hear this, it may well be over, kind of the way the podcasts go. You know, the Badgers, they have been the most consistently inconsistent team, I think, in sports this year. I think that they're capable of beating just about anybody in the country. And I truly believe that. But, they have these lapses. They have these spells where they can't hit the broadside of a barn with a tennis racket. They couldn't throw it in the ocean at times in the last couple of games. Until late, you know, they made a late run against Iowa. They made a late run against Illinois. This is a team that, man, they scratch and they claw, and the effort is always there. But they just, again, they have these lapses. So they've got Iowa coming up tonight. Again, the nature of a podcast, it may well be over by the time that you listen to this. So we'll see how that goes. And then, of course, Selection Sunday's coming up in a couple of days. Also, the Bucks, they get back to it after the All-Star break. They clobber the Knicks in their first game back, 134-101. The Knicks, by the way, not the embarrassment that they have been over the last, I would say, most of the last 30 years. They did make it to the NBA Finals in the mid-1990s. The biggest thing that I remember about the Knicks in the NBA Finals was they were in the NBA Finals when the O.J. chase and the white Bronco was going on. That's all I can remember of the Knicks in the NBA Finals. They've been putrid for most of the last three decades. Most, not all the last three, but most of the last three decades. They're actually okay now. They're a 500 team now. They're an up-and-coming team, but the Bucks just took it to them at Fiserv Forum. $7 scoring in double figures. So I feel like this team is starting to really find its groove. Speaking of finding its groove, you can find us in our groove on our social media accounts. You can find us at Doug Russell Pod. That is the username on both Instagram and Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for the Doug Russell Podcast. We're up on YouTube as well. And we always love hearing from you. It is DougRussellPod@gmail.com. Again, DougRussellPod@gmail.com. And for all of that, including our back catalog, you can download all of our shows. You can do it all for free, DougRussellPod.com. Again, www.DougRussellPod.com. That is our website address. But the Brewers are what's on tap for the show today. Opening day is less than 3 weeks away. There are some new faces on the team, of course. The question marks are there. Joining me today here on the Doug Russell Podcast, he runs one of the best Brewers blogs there is. He is the editor-in-chief at ReviewingTheBrew.com. He's also the co-host of the Cold Brew Pod. You can find him on Twitter at DGasper24. David Gasper joins us here on the Doug Russell Podcast. David, I appreciate the time today. How are you?
I'm doing great, Doug. The weather's beautiful outside, and I'm going to be heading out to Arizona in a couple days, so it's really just been a good time. A lot of good stuff going on with the Brewers.
Yeah, can you believe it, by the way? 2 weeks ago, we had these mounds of snow, and now it's just about baseball season. I'm looking outside the studio window right now. I'm actually seeing some green grass on the ground. It's not just brown anymore. It's actually starting to perk up a little bit. So that's always a sure sign of spring. What is your assessment of the off season for this Milwaukee Brewers when you take a look at it from maybe an overview perspective?
You know, I think in general, when you look at the off season, it actually was a really good off season for David Stearns. And it was one that was nowhere near as bad as a lot of people were expecting, or a lot of people were saying that it was. And the Brewers ended up with Colton Wong and Jackie Bradley Jr., two huge additions, not only to help the defense, but they're consistently good presences on offense. Colton Wong, with what he's able to do at the top of the order, he should really help out there. Jackie Bradley Jr., the depth that they're going to have there in the outfield, and how they're going to be strong in that position. And the Brewers were able to pay money to get those guys. And coming off a year with no fans, many were expecting a huge downturn in the payroll and selling everything off, and you know, somewhere in the $75, $80 million range for the payroll. But you know, instead, payroll actually went up from what it was supposed, or from what it was prior to the proration in 2020. Payroll's gone up for 2021, so they have the money available. They were willing to spend it on Justin Turner. He ended up going back to Los Angeles. But the Brewers were able to pivot pretty well. They got Wong. They got Jackie Bradley Jr. They got a Travis Shaw to really kind of help out at third base. They didn't really focus their offseason additions on first and third. But in general, the team got a lot better. And really the only big name player that they lost was Corey Knable that they traded to the Dodgers. So they didn't really have to cut payroll that much. They were able to add to it, and I think it was a really strong offseason.
You take a look at some of the new acquisitions as you're talking about, specifically the one that surprised – actually, you know what? Colton Wong surprised me a little bit as well, because you figure, well, they've got Keston Hiura, who obviously had a terrible season at the plate a year ago, hitting only .212, not even having an on-base percentage of .300. It seemed as though pitchers had kind of figured him out, but you knew that he was a liability defensively. Then you bring in Colton Wong, who's won the last two Gold Gloves at second base, and then you bring in another Gold Glover in Jackie Bradley Jr. It seems as though there's a pattern to those two specific acquisitions that David Stearns and Matt Arnold decided to make this offseason.
Yeah, it's adding to that run prevention unit, the defense that really kind of struggled a lot in 2020, especially after the Lorenzo Cain opt-out. You had Avisail Garcia in center field, and, you know, he did his best out there, and he wasn't bad by any stretch of the imagination, but he wasn't Lorenzo Cain level. And the fact that they didn't have Cain out there or someone of that nature defensively, it really kind of hurt them. And then also Keston Hira up the middle at second base. He struggled defensively. Orlando Arcia actually had a down year defensively. So, you know, really the focus on run prevention, which we do have an article up on the site about, the one up a couple days ago, the focus on run prevention over run scoring seems to be what the Brewers are going for. And it actually is a stronger correlation between run prevention leading to wins rather than run scoring leading to wins. So it was a very interesting article that we had by one of our contributors go up on the site on Reviewing the Brew in the past couple of days. But yeah, that focus on run prevention with those guys, it's what David Stearns is going for, and you know, it's worked out in the past.
How much of that, in your opinion, do you think was perhaps informed by last year's offensive struggles? I mentioned Keston Hira only hitting .212. Much has been made, obviously, and for good reason, of the atrocious year that Christian Yelich had. After winning two straight batting titles, he's around the Mendoza line. Did some other things well offensively, but really got off to that terrible start that kind of marred his entire 2020 season. But, you know, there were other guys. You mentioned Orlando Arcia. You know, Avisail Garcia, somebody who, you know, you expected more from offensively. Behind the dish, Omar Narvaez had an awful year at the plate as well. But yet, still, even with all of those offensive struggles, the Brewers, granted they were sub-500, they were 29-31, but they still made it to the postseason. How much those offensive struggles do you think informed the decision and maybe the philosophy of Stearns and Arnold to go defense this year as opposed to maybe trying to bolster up the offense?
Oh, it totally played into it. And David Stearns, I mean, he'll look at all those things and every single factor. And yeah, that certainly played a role where they didn't really have the strong defense last year. They were really kind of dependent on the offense to win games, and the offense wasn't there. The offense can go hot and cold between every single game. You can have one game where you score 10 runs, you could have the next game where you get shut out, and that's just kind of the nature of baseball, no matter how good of an offensive team you have. But defensively, defense is going to be consistent pretty much every single game. That's not really you're hot or you're cold. That's really kind of a, you know, as long as you're healthy, you're providing a consistent level of defense for the most part. So that certainly would play a factor, I would think. And, you know, when you looked at some of the offseason or some of the players in the offseason and free agency that the Brewers were rumored to look at, you know, like Eddie Rosario and try to put him at first base, or Shin-Soo Chu and all these other guys, and just kind of not strong defenders but going for the bat, none of those really turned into anything. And, you know, that's where the Brewers really kind of pivoted to get Jackie Bradley Jr., get Colton Wong, and just defend everything, not let a single ball drop.
Every time I think of Keston Hira moving from second base to first base, I'm reminded of the movie Moneyball, when Ron Washington is in Scott Hatterberg's living room along with Billy Bean, played by Brad Pitt, of course, and he talks to Hatterberg, Chris Pratt, and he says, "Wash, tell Scotty how easy it is to play first base." And Ron Washington, without missing a beat, you know, granted it's acting, but without missing a beat, "It's incredibly hard." how much of a problem do you think it's going to be for a minus defender at second base like Keston here? Now, granted, a lot of that was making the throw, but how much of a, not only position switch, but how much of a learning curve do you think there's going to be between second base and first base for someone who's already been struggling defensively?
Yeah, it's going to be a hard learning curve for Keston Hira. I mean, he's never played that position, not even going back down to T-ball in grade school. He never played over at first base. So, you know, it's a new spot on the diamond, new angles to look at, different ways to think about footwork and where you got to be, how you got to position yourself, and all these things. And, you know, we've seen it in spring training. You know, he missed a scoop the other day, which led to an error being charged to Travis Shaw. And he had a throw out into left field, and you know, there's going to be growing pains, there's going to be struggles, and there's going to be times during the regular season where he just misplays a ball, and it's going to be frustrating for sure. But if he hits 300 with 30 home runs, which he is certainly capable of doing, I don't think the Brewers are going to be too upset with that. And, you know, it seems kind of weird considering we're just talking about how, oh, the Brewers are going defense-heavy focus and not focusing on the offense. But, you know, for Hira, it's a little bit of the opposite because, you know, you know he's not a strong defender, but the bat is just so good. And if they can find a way to get his timing work back out and cut down on the strikeouts a little bit, then he's going to be a great force in the middle of that lineup. And, you know, at first base, he'll get better as time goes on, and part of it's just the experience. He's only been playing that position for, like, 2 weeks, so he's still got some more learning to do for sure.
So what does that mean then for Daniel Vogelbach? Obviously, there's no designated hitter in National League games this year like there was the Universal DH a year ago. I know he came in, and granted, the sample size was relatively small, but he was the only guy who was consistently raking at the end of the season.
Yeah, it really is kind of a tough spot for Vogelbach not having the DH this year. And, you know, perhaps they could keep him as the first guy on the bench, and perhaps not. It's really kind of up in the air, I think, for Vogelbach's roster spots. I don't think he's guaranteed a spot. I don't think he's guaranteed to miss the roster, but, you know, we'll see what continues to happen with him in spring training, and he hasn't really been able to get it going too much offensively yet, so that could certainly play a factor as well. So, I mean, for Vogelbach, with Hira now over there, because Hira's an everyday bat, they're not really a good platoon type option. Hira can be in there every single day. Vogelbach really can't, and he doesn't. He's also not a strong defender over there at first base, so it's a tough situation for him. And, you know, we'll see kind of how the roster shakes out as we get closer to opening day, but he's in a battle for his spot right now.
Speaking of battles, this is hypothetical, and I realize that, but if Ryan Braun, and he hasn't officially said he's going to retire, but he's not in camp, so I think we can all kind of read the handwriting on the wall, but if the Brewers had signed him to, say, for example, a minor league contract with an invitation to major league camp, and he had an opportunity to make the roster, and the salary was not a factor, do you think he'd make this team?
Yeah, I think the Brewers would you know, give Ryan Braun a chance. I'm not sure if that would happen now after Jackie Bradley Jr. Getting signed. You know, I don't know if they'd do that right now. And, you know, Braun, I think he wouldn't be willing to come back at this point in the year. And, you know, I've seen Trevor Plouffe and a couple other guys kind of talk about it where it could be something like July, mid-season, where if the Brewers, you know, need some help, need an acquisition somewhere, that, you know, he'd be willing to come back and sign a deal, because Ryan Braun doesn't like spring training. We've known this for a couple years now. So, you know, I think the Brewers would find a spot for him for sure. If he wanted to come back, the Brewers would find a spot to make it work. So it's just a matter of Braun deciding whether or not he wants to come back and play, and when he does.
So then, in your opinion, let's assume that Lorenzo Cain is healthy, which is a big assumption at this point. But let's say Cain, Bradley, Yelich, Garcia, they're all 100% ready to go. They're all healthy. What's your everyday outfield? Who gets the most? I mean, obviously, Yelich is going to get the most at bats, but how do you parse it out beyond that?
Yeah, it's going to be, I think what they're going to do is something where Lorenzo Cain might get more of the Ryan Braun treatment from the last couple of years, where he gets more regular off days to rest his legs or whatever he needs to get Jackie Bradley in there. I mean, you got plenty of at-bats between that group, and, you know, you could get all four of those guys probably at least 120 games if you rotate them in a certain way. So, you know, the at-bats are there, and Abisail Garcia actually went in to have a meeting with Craig Counsell the other day after the Jackie Bradley Jr. signing, trying to get an explanation. It's like, okay, how is this going to work? You know, I'm a little concerned here. We already have three starting outfielders, and you just signed Jackie Bradley Jr. But, you know, they talked to Garcia about it, how it's all going to work, and Garcia's cool with it now, apparently. So he's bought in. They've explained it to him. You know, Craig Counsell and David Stearns may not try to fully explain it to us in that same kind of way, but, you know, Counsell and Stearns and Garcia and that whole outfield group know how it's going to work out, how it's going to rotate, and how they're going to get everybody there at bats. So, you know, if they're all cool with it, I think it should all work out in the end.
Let's move from the player position groups over to the pitching staff. That was the strength of this team last year, specifically at the top of the rotation. My question, though, is after Woodruff and Burns, does this team have what it takes to get through those other three spots in the rotation, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think they got a really good group there, even behind Woodruff and Burns. Josh Lindblom, he worked on his spin efficiency this offseason and really just kind of getting himself back adjusted. And, you know, he put up some strong numbers in the back half of last season after he was finally able to adjust a little bit more to being back in MLB rather than being in Korea. Brett Anderson is a guy who, with the improved defense behind him, with Colton Wong there at second, he's a ground ball pitcher, so I think he could see an uptick in results this year. And, you know, I really kind of like the options they have for the fifth starter spot. I think Adrian Houser is probably the favorite for that spot at the moment, but I think Freddy Peralta could jump in there, and he could be in the starting rotation. I'm really excited to see what he can do with that slider now firmly a part of his pitch mix. So they got a really good group, pretty underrated too. MLB had their top 10 rotations that they put out on Twitter the other day. And they had the Brewers at number 10. And, you know, a lot of that is riding on the strength of Burns and Woodruff. But they got a pretty deep group. They got a lot of options there. And then, I mean, coming up later in the year, you're going to have Aaron Ashby. You're going to have Ethan Small. So they got some really talented arms that are up and coming. And they got some talented arms that are already in there that can fight for, you know, or put up some really good numbers. The Brewers really believe in Houser. They think he's got really good stuff. He had a down year last year, kind of like Corbin Burns had in 2019. So perhaps with an offseason at the pitching lab and working on his stuff, he can come out and dominate in 2021.
How surprised were you that the Brewers weren't able to move Josh Hader in the offseason?
I was a little surprised. I thought this kind of would have been the perfect time to do it, to kind of get some more room for the payroll. But, you know, looking at some of the other trades that happened this offseason, looking at Blake Snell, looking at Yu Darvish and Francisco Lindor and all these other players that you'd think would just get massive returns, there wasn't really... The returns were kind of underwhelming in those trades, and for these star players, the prospects, the return packages that went back really were kind of underwhelming. So perhaps the market just wasn't there. The Brewers are asking a ton for Josh Hader, and, you know, it's tough to get teams that are going to be willing to, that have the ability to pay that and are willing to pay that. The San Diego Padres are probably one of them. But they also spent a lot of their prospects on other additions, such as Snell and Darvish and several others. So it's just kind of a matter of finding someone who's willing to pay the price and has the ability to pay the price. And that's a very small group. It's a small market. Every team would be interested, but at the price the Brewers have, not everyone can pay it. So, you know, perhaps next offseason would be the time, but I think at some point Josh Hader will be traded before he reaches free agency. I'm just not sure when exactly that moment's going to be. But if it's not going to be this offseason, but perhaps this next one after 2021, perhaps that might be the moment, because then he's got 2 years left and you can still get a pretty strong return for him.
And then, obviously, that dovetails into the question of what does Devin Williams have to do for an encore after he was unhittable last season?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully something similar to what he did last year.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, it's I don't know if he's going to have a 0.33 ERA again, but I certainly wouldn't complain if he did. So getting him to repeat that would be very nice to see for sure. And it's just kind of a matter of adjusting to the new year, because there's going to be fans in the stands now. He didn't have that at all last year. So it's going to be a different feel in that stadium when you come in those high-pressure situations in the eighth and ninth innings. So, you know, him getting himself back under him, or getting himself back to, you know, the 98-mile-an-hour fastball, the nasty changeup, because he hasn't appeared in any spring training games just yet. They're working him back from that shoulder still. So, you know, if he's healthy, he's got the nasty stuff to still be unhittable, whether it's a shortened season or a full season with fans or whatever it is. That stuff is still going to play. It's just a matter of how mentally he's able to adjust to the season with fans, because, you know, he hasn't had full stadiums before, and we're still going to have to wait a little while for full stadiums. But, yeah, definitely going to be very interesting to see for Williams and for the other young guys like Justin Topa and Drew Rasmussen, who came in last year and performed well in their first year in the big leagues. So very exciting what the Brewers have with those young arms down there.
Do you think that it will disproportionately hurt teams like the Brewers, who have to rely as much as they do on their farm systems, as opposed to, you mentioned, the Padres or the Dodgers or the Yankees or, I don't know, the Red Sox, teams that historically have spent more money than the Brewers are able to and don't necessarily have to dip into their minor league system as much as the Brewers have had to do over the last 50 years, I suppose, or at least 30 years? No minor league season a year ago, how much does that put the Brewers behind the eight ball, not having those game experiences for those young players who will go into potentially games this year not having played competitively in a while?
Yeah, it's certainly going to be tough for everyone across baseball with that situation. And, you know, the Brewers, I think they made the most of it as much as they could. And it was really a good situation for a lot of guys like Antoine Kelly, guys like Ashby, and other players that they had there. They really just kind of needed the time to work on some stuff without really worrying about results. But it was also a detriment for some guys such as Corey Ray and Zach Brown, who really kind of needed a full season at AAA to really kind of get some stats, get some game experience against opponents that aren't fellow Brewers players. And, you know, that really kind of stunk for them and really is hampering their development. And that's a lot of the guys really at the top of the Brewers farm system in AAA who are in that situation, because, you know, a lot of those guys, they were big-name prospects, but they've really kind of hit the skids in the past couple of years. And haven't quite been able to make the jump. The Corey Rays, the Lucas Ersigs, the Zach Browns, they got up there and they were kind of stalling for a little bit, and they really needed last season to jump back up and break out, and they weren't able to get it. So, yeah, it's certainly tough, but, you know, for the Brewers farm system, a lot of the guys that they have near the top of it, their top prospects, yeah, they haven't played in general, whether it's their 2019 international signees, whether it's their 2020 draft picks. A lot of those top guys have not played professional games or have played only a very small handful. So really just kind of getting a season in this year is going to be so important for them. And, you know, it certainly did hurt the Brewers like it hurt everyone else last year not having a minor league season. And, you know, some players were able to thrive with it, and some players weren't.
Who's the prospect you're most intrigued by?
Ooh, in general, Hedbert Perez is the prospect that I am most intrigued by in this entire system. He's 17 years old, a left-handed hitter, five-tool outfielder. He's got it all, man. He's got the hit tool. He's got the power. He's got the speed. He's got the defense. He's got everything. The son of Robert Perez, a Brewer back in 2002, all the way back on that team. It was 2001 or 2002. It was one of those years.
It was one of the years we like to forget, David.
One of those players from that team. His kid, Hedbert Perez, is in the Brewer system. And, man, I am so excited to see this kid in some game action this year. 2019 signee. signed for $700,000 out of Venezuela. And he's just got so much stuff. I ranked him number two on my top 50 Brewers prospects list. He's got so much, man. I'm so excited to see him in games. He's down there at Phoenix right now on the minor league side, and he's been traveling to some games, but he hasn't shown up in a Cactus League game yet. So maybe we'll get a chance to see him at some point this month. But other than that, I mean, he's probably going to be I'm not sure if he'll be in the DSL this summer or if he'll be in a complex ball in Arizona, or, you know, maybe he could see some time in low A in Carolina this year. But, man, he's exciting, and I don't know if enough fans know about him, but Hedbert Perez is a name to watch, a name to get excited about in the near future. He's got it all.
So I would then venture a guess as to say, much like you are the Corbin Burns Cy Young hype train conductor, you will at some point be the Hedberg Perez MVP hype train conductor?
Oh, yes, 100%. I'm going to conduct both trains, both hype trains.
That's pretty good. That's talent, man.
Yeah, that is multitasking right there.
He is David Gasper. He is the editor-in-chief at ReviewingTheBrew.com, also co-host of the Cold Brew Pod. Tell us if some of our listeners aren't familiar with ReviewingTheBrew.com or your podcast, the Cold Brew Pod, which I've been on. Tell us about what you do and how you got started in doing this.
Yeah, so how I really kind of got started at Reviewing the Brew, I mean, it was sophomore year of college. I had a buddy of mine that wrote for FanSided, and I had a professor in one of my, I think it was Western Lit, something like that. I had to write like a 10-page paper or something. I think it was on like Don Quixote or something else. I don't know.
But sounds fantastic. I love it.
Oh, yeah. So I just...
scintillating.
I know. I completely BS'd that whole paper, which is what I did with a lot of my papers in college. But she came back to me and she's like, "This is so well written." And it's like, you know, have you considered like, you know, an English major or a minor or anything like that? She was just like loving like how well written it was. I'm just like, if I could write that well on something I did not care about, like perhaps if I wrote about something I did care about, it could go really well. So. I just, you know, kind of got interested in there and started as a contributor at Reviewing the Brew and just started writing, man. And it was so much fun, and just kind of grew to me becoming the site editor in 2018, and, you know, been growing it ever since. We're closing in on 10,000 Twitter followers now, just a little bit away. So a nice little push there would be nice to get us there before opening day. But yeah, so it's just kind of been really cool building up that site and just putting up, you know, really good content, I feel like, you know, good nuanced analysis and not just, you know, random rantings and ravings about the team or things like that. Just actual, you know, looking into what they're doing, what's going on, and trying to analyze it and explain it and really kind of coming at it there from that perspective, and it's really resonated with people, and the site's really grown with it, and it's been a lot of fun. And then we started on the Cold Brew Podcast last year, and you know it's been great. It's me and Matt, my fellow editor at the site, and you know we just have people like you, Doug, and have them on and just have a conversation. You know, it's not really too structured or anything. It's just having a conversation, a talking Brewers. You know, it's a lot of fun. We had Tim Allen on this last week, and you know, it's kind of a wonder we didn't have him on earlier, knowing Tim Allen.
Right.
But
I work with Tim. Yeah. I'm familiar.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's like, come on, guys. It took you this long to call me. Like, he was almost upset.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah, so we had a podcast with him that just went up here on Thursday. Really fun conversation. We could have gone 3 hours with him talking Brewers, but we didn't. It's a little over an hour, but still, it's a really fun episode. And we've got another fun interview coming up with Hayden Cantrell on the podcast, so that'll be coming up here soon. And we've had a couple of other players, Josh Lindblom, Aaron Ashby, And we've also had Pitching Ninja on there. So that was a fun episode.
Pitching Ninja, I'm not familiar.
Yeah, Pitching Ninja on Twitter, Rob Friedman. He's the one that posts all the GIFs of all the pitchers. Devin Williams doing nasty stuff. The Airbender. He's the one that gave him the Airbender nickname.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's got like 200,000 followers or something. There was just a big write up on him in the New York Times. But
oh, wow.
Yeah, we had him on, and it's like, hey man, you want to talk Devin Williams' changeup and Corbin Burns' cutter? He's like, yeah. So, it was pretty easy to convince him there, but yeah, so he was a lot of fun. We've had a lot of really fun, really good guests on the podcast, and you know, some more to come. And it's been growing, man, and it's been great. And we got to have you on again at some point here soon as well. So.
I'd love to anytime, more than happy. I love coming on with you guys. You guys were a whole lot of fun the one time that I was on.
Yeah, for sure, man, and yeah, we'll definitely have you on again at some point here, and it's just been so much fun doing that podcast, man. It's a lot of fun getting to know, you know, all these people here in Brewers Media, it's just been great, and the support really is from everyone has really been awesome.
This will date you like it dates me a little bit, but what's the Brewers team that hooked you? Because I was 9 when they won the pennant. Now, again, this, you know, spells out my age, but that was also 1982, the first year that I was ever in the Brewers Pepsi fan club. Now, I don't know what they're selling any of their fan experiences like, but here's what you got, and I'll tell you the price in a second. Maybe I'll ask you to guess the price, but you got 6 general admission tickets, 1 per month of the season. You got a subscription to What's Brewing magazine, which I looked, I mean, it, I think it was like the 20th, it's still burned into my brain, the 28th of the month every year without fail. And if it was late, it was always on the 29th, but it was always on the 28th. So if it was late, I was pretty salty about it. And then some like trinket, like a hat or a duffel bag or batting gloves or something like that. They rotated the trinket every year. Do you know how much they charged back for that entire package? What's Brewing magazine for a year? I think they had 11. They had one double issue, but 11 issues of that. The 6 tickets and the trinket. You know how much they charged for that?
$50.
$5.
Oh, my God.
$5. The best deal in town. I mean, people, like, their eyes bug out when I tell them that. It was $5. And I didn't grow up rich by any stretch of the imagination, but that's something that my dad could afford. And that's what hooked me as a Brewers fan. And it was a pretty good time to be a Brewers fan as well, growing up with that particular club. They didn't televise the home games, but man, oh man, I listened to every home game and I watched every road game. I think they were on Channel 18 at the time. So that's what hooked me. And I'm always interested in what got Brewers fans of all ages, what got them hooked. So what was the team that hooked you?
Oh man, well let's see. I was born in '96, so the first
Thanks
season
for that,
I really
by the way, David.
Yeah, no problem. So the first season I really have like full like strong memories of was 2002. So that was not a great team that really kind of hooked, but you know for whatever reason it still kind of did. You know Richie Sexson back then the big guy and. I remember liking Jose Hernandez just because of his, you know, big sunglasses. He struck out all the time, but he had the sunglasses, so he was cool. But yeah, you had all those guys back then, and yeah, it was really kind of a weird team that hooked me. I remember my dad telling me that even me just watching the games. Back then when I was 5 years old, I was making better managerial decisions than Jerry Royster that year. So,
well, it could have been worse. It could have been Davey Lowe's, man. He was a special guy to cover, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
He
yeah,
woke I, up I, on the wrong side of the bed every day.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that was a rough time there. I remember like reading the Journal Sentinel like one time. It was just like Cardinals 12, Brewers 2. And I just remember looking at him like, Dad, why do the Brewers suck? So believe it or not, that was the team that hooked me.
Okay.
But yeah, just kind of, you know, going through and then, you know, Prince Fielder comes up and then Ryan Braun as well. And, you know, Ben Sheets and that whole group, and you know, just kind of building towards that team in 2008, man, it was something. That 2008 team was special. But yeah, the first season I really have strong memories of was 2002.
Okay. Well, at least they were building towards something a few years later, as opposed to being hooked in 1982 and then being disappointed mostly for most of the next 26 years.
Yeah, for the next 26 years.
Yeah, until the pressure release valve went off in 2008 when they finally made it back to the postseason. David Gasper, follow him on Twitter, at dgasper24. Again, editor-in-chief of reviewingthebrew.com. You can follow that Twitter handle, at, very simply, reviewingthebrew. He's also the co-host of the Cold Brew Pod, so it's at coldbrew_pod. And also, tell us about Prospects 1500. What is that project?
Yeah, so Prospects 1500, it's a site of really just kind of a bunch of prospects writers and just kind of, you know, going to, you know, like all the leagues, watching the minor league guys. It's a lot of like fantasy baseball, dynasty fantasy, like focused. So like over there, like I write a top 50 Brewers prospects list, which I did back in January. And just kind of, you know, a couple of, you know, things every so often, just kind of looking at the prospects and how they kind of fit into the future over there. So it's really kind of a fun group, a cool group over there of guys just kind of looking at the minor leagues and focusing on that group. It's a very interesting group of people, and you know, just an interesting area to research and to dig into, because prospects are really kind of, you know, growing in popularity among fan bases. Everyone's kind of looking at the prospect list, prospect sites, and seeing at who's coming up next to be the next Ryan Braun, the next whoever. And, you know, it's really kind of a fun area that, you know, I was able to get into, and now I'm able to focus in on it a little bit more over there, and it's been a lot of fun.
Very good. David Gasper, again, you can follow him on Twitter, at dgasper24, editor-in-chief of reviewingthebrew.com. David, I appreciate the time so much. Hopefully we'll get a chance to do this again soon, and anytime you want me on your show, just hit me up.
Yeah, absolutely, Doug. Thank you so much for having me on, and yeah, we'll definitely we'll keep in touch, and we'll get you on soon.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Can't wait to go back on with you guys. There he goes, David Gasper, editor-in-chief of Reviewing the Brew. You can also catch him on his Cold Brew Pod as well. Follow him on Twitter at dgasper24. Again, dgasper24. That'll do it for the weekend edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Go Badgers! They've got, again, Iowa coming up as I record this tonight, but Selection Sunday is coming up in just a couple of days as well. Certainly we'll have some thoughts on that on the Monday show as well. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you then right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.